The Back Page, brought to you by Mirror Sport and backed by Ladbrokes.
Okay, so happy new year, lads, and welcome back to the first episode this year of The Back Page. My name is Shane Stapleton. With me this week, I have the Offaly Rover, Pat Nolan. How are you doing, Pat?
Very well, Shane, thanks.
Yeah, the only man who's blocked by his own county board on Twitter, which is a fair old achievement. You must be doing your job right. With me also have Shane Mahan from Ladbrokes, Rob Hines from the Mirror Sport, and on the line I have Christian Walsh from the Liverpool Echo. How are you all doing, lads?
Good, yeah.
Very well. Not too bad.
Yeah, so this week we're going to... Good stuff, Christian. This week we're going to look at the FA Cup action, especially the Merseyside Derby. A little look at the horse race and the Welsh National coming, the BDO darts and the rugby as well. But no better place to start than the Merseyside Derby. Friday night, BBC, the Liverpool versus Everton. Christian, do you give Everton any chance here? They're on a bit of a stinker of form at the moment and Liverpool are ripping it up.
It's a hard one to know. I mean, the thing that people say in Liverpool is that when it's Derby Day, the phone book goes out of the window. But to be honest, over the past 5 or 6 years, that hasn't really been the case because Everton haven't actually beaten Liverpool in a Merseyside Derby since October 2010, which, when you think about it, is a remarkable run. There's been a lot of games in that time, about 12 or 13 games. I mean, you look at what happened back in December with the 1-1 draw. I think Liverpool were far and away the best side in that game. But Everton managed to just dig in and get that result. And in Liverpool, there's certainly a feeling that, you know, Sam Allardyce has got Liverpool's number slightly from his previous days as Blackburn manager, Bolton manager, and of course Crystal Palace. He's the last manager to beat Liverpool at Anfield. He did that with his Palace side back in April. So I think certainly more so than if Ronald Koeman was coming still or if David Unsworth was in charge. I feel there's a bit of worry in Liverpool because, you know, it's just that type of football and that type of style of play which can be Liverpool's Achilles heel defending that. But that being said, Liverpool, you know, when they're on form and when they're firing, they're absolutely sensational. They're irresistible to watch and they're impossible to defend against. And yeah, I think on paper, I think Liverpool are certainly, you know, heavy favourites. It's just a case of, I suppose, twofold. Number one, what sort of team will Jürgen Klopp go for? And number two, you know, can the Allardyce factor lead Everton to a good result once more?
Yeah, and Christian, like, Liverpool have shown a lot of bottle recently. They've gone 16 games unbeaten in all competitions, came from behind to beat Leicester, beat Burnley late on with the Clavin goal. Whereas Everton, after a great start under Sam and just at the end of David Unsworth's run there, they've only 2 points from the last 12. So, I mean, everything does suggest that it's going to be a home win at Anfield.
It does. I mean, let's not beat around the bush. Liverpool are, you know, rightly famous for this. I think what's happened with Everton over the past three or four games, obviously Sam Allardyce came in and focused on implementing a more defensive style of play, which is obviously what he's renowned for wherever he's been. And he's done that to the detriment of any sort of attack. He seems to get the balance fairly okay in his first few games, but they've hit results, well, games against Chelsea, of course, and Manchester United are not easy. But at the same time, there's also been Bournemouth and West Brom, and I think worryingly for Everton, they've only scored one goal in that time, and that was against Bournemouth, who can be quite creaky at the back themselves. So I think he's trying to strike some sort of balance between attack and defence still. Against Liverpool in December, you know, it was very much a defence first mantra that he adopted. It was, I think they had two shots on target. One of those was from the penalty spot, but they got the 1-1. I think Liverpool missed several good chances in that game. I think Mane, just on the stroke of half time, he should have squared it to three unmarked players in the box and instead elected to fire it past the post. So in terms of form as well, you know, Liverpool have shown a different side of themselves in the past two games. Obviously, when they're very good, they're brilliant, and when they're free-flowing, they're really impossible to deal with. But at the same time, what they've shown in these past two games is that in adversity, they can grind out the results as well. And that's been missing from this Liverpool side under Jürgen Klopp, certainly over the past year, I'd say. The goal against Burnley was the latest winner they've scored since Mane scored against Everton all the way back in December 2016. So they went a whole year without scoring a decisive goal in the last minute of a game. But, you know, two very difficult games against Leicester and Burnley as well. but they got through them and their confidence will be high. It's just a case of if Jürgen will decide to keep that momentum going with the team that he selected at Burnley, or he's going to make more changes yet again.
Mm. Pat, you're a big Liverpool man, I believe.
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah. So do you think with Jürgen Klopp letting Salah and Mane go to the African Player of the Year Awards, you know, it's a massive round trip, do you think Liverpool are actually particularly interested in winning this game? They've got the Champions League, the top four push. Coutinho's going to be out with a thigh injury, I think, even if he is at the club, or whether he's at the club or not. So do you think Liverpool are particularly bothered about this game?
Well, I don't think that decision sends out the right signals about the two lads going to, is it Ghana, Thursday night? And Klopp said they'll be sleeping in a hotel and the two players will be sleeping on the plane, and that's the only difference. Well, that's quite a considerable difference, if you ask me. I'd much rather be sleeping in a hotel than on a plane. Would he do it the night before the Champions League game against Porto? I very much doubt it. He's over the course of his reign, he's in his FA Cup matches, he's talked about taking the competition seriously and then subsequently put out weakened teams, as we saw last year against Wolves when they lost at Anfield. I would think this is his best chance of a trophy by far. They're not going to win the league. They probably won't win the Champions League, but they certainly have the potential to win this competition. Liverpool have only won one trophy since 2006. That was the League Cup in 2012. Every Liverpool manager since Bill Shankly, with the exception of Brendan Rodgers and Roy Hodgson, who was only there for 6 months, have won a trophy. And Klopp has already lost two finals as Liverpool manager. I think he could do with getting the trophy on board. And for that reason, I think he should treat this competition with the utmost respect and try and get something in the cabinet.
Shane, what are the prices with Ladbrokes? Yeah,
just on the match betting itself with Ladbrokes, Shane, the match betting at 2-5 Liverpool, so very short once again. 13-4 the draw. Everton at 13-2 outsider of the party. Just on the match odds and both teams to score, which is interesting enough to me. I flagged up the draw when it was 1-1 at Anfield last time, and that duly obliged. I can see a similar result happening this coming weekend. On the match odds and both teams to score, the draw here 24-5. So you're giving yourself an option of maybe a 1-1, a 2-2, or you know, possibly even a 3-3. So just shy of 5-1 for the draw and both teams scoring.
Yeah, I think we've spoken on it here before about you know, Liverpool's defensive problems, and Virgil van Dijk could make his debut. Will he be the man to save the defence? I don't know. I quite fancy Everton to get a goal. I think Liverpool to win and both teams to score at 21-10 is a really good bet here. I can see Liverpool, if they do put out their first team, maybe winning by a couple of goals. But I think that's the bet for the game for me, 21-10.
And Everton could park the bus again. They're doing it against everyone. It was horrendous to watch them against Man United.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely horrendous. And you know, they could definitely do it here again.
Just very, very briefly as well, we are double odds on this match in our shops up and down the country. So if you're having a first goal score bet, we're double the odds if it clicks inside the first 15 minutes. So you'll be hoping for an early goal at Anfield in this match.
Christian, we're in the middle of the eye of another Coutinho transfer storm. I'm just wondering, like, obviously they've spent 75 million on Virgil van Dijk already, but was there anything to be said for selling Coutinho for 100 million and then trying to attract the likes of Ozil and Sanchez, both 29, both like prime players, and try and sign them on big contracts for the summer? Because it's unlikely that Liverpool are going to win the title this year anyway. Well, look, they're not, and they probably won't win the Champions League. So looking a little bit more medium term, is something like that something that people would think that would make sense?
I mean, there's definitely been a change in the stance of how FSG and the Jürgen Klopp have approached the transfer market. I think they were very much, both of them were in tune in terms of it was always potential first, maybe, and get them when they're younger and look to, you know, a bit like what they did with Coutinho. Obviously Klopp wasn't in charge then, but what they've done with Coutinho, what they've done with Mane, and get them a little bit younger and progress them at Anfield and make them become superstars at Anfield, at Liverpool, as Liverpool players. I think the Virgil van Dijk deal sort of showed a little shift away from that. I think Klopp himself sort of admitted that, you know, the rules have changed now, certainly from when he was Borussia Dortmund manager. And I think the rules have changed since FSG took over in 2012, in the sense that everybody's got so much money now from obviously the TV deals and you know, a lot of Premier League clubs are filthy rich now, and you've got to flex your financial muscle if you've got to compete at the top end of the Premier League. So, you know, I can see something in terms of a medium term option maybe coming in, but at the same time, somebody like Sanchez, somebody like Ozil, I couldn't envision either of them would really be on Klopp's radar. You know, in the summer, Thomas Lamar was somebody that they wanted. He's only 22, you know, a Monaco player, one of that batch who got to the Champions League semi-finals last season, and he's someone who fits the profile, if you will, of Klopp and FSG, that you can get them young and progress them and develop them. But at the same time, you know, if you were to lose Coutinho for something in excess of £100 million, you feel like you've got to replace him in some way. And if those long-term options aren't available, then, you know, would they be open to something a little bit more short-term? Possibly. What I would say, though, is as great as Alexis Sanchez is, and I think Mesut Ozil is still a really good player, I just don't feel either of them would necessarily fit into the Klopp ethos and what he's trying to do. I think someone like Oxlade-Chamberlain is far more, you know, in his eye line as he was in the summer than a Sanchez or an Ozil. I mean, I personally think it wouldn't be a bad idea, you know, get Sanchez. He's meant to be available for around £20 million. Arsenal look to cash in on him. But I don't think Jürgen Klopp will agree with me. I think he may go sort of a medium term in the transfer market if he has to. But I think ultimately he will stick to, you know, players that proven young players, you know, not just gambling on absolute potential, proven players like Thomas Lamar if Coutinho does go.
And just to stick your neck on the line for this particular game.
Oh, you can never ask anyone based in Liverpool how the Merseyside derby's going to go. It's going to be very tight. I think it'll be a lot tighter than people expect. I really don't know how Mane and Salah, will, as you were saying before, how that will play out in terms of them both being on the plane. But I'll go 2-1 either side. I'll put my neck on the line and say 2-1 Liverpool, but it could easily be 2-1 Everton.
I'll go 1-0 Liverpool. Pat?
3-0 Liverpool.
Wow.
I'll go 3-1 Liverpool.
And Shane?
I'm going to go for the draw, 1-1 at 15-2 on the correct score.
Okay. So next up then, just a short spin up the road, Man United against Derby, the battle of the second place teams, United second in the Premier League, although they're not exactly flying, that Everton win aside, and Derby second in the Championship. Christian, what's the, just looking up the road to Man United, and I presume no matter whether you support Liverpool or Everton, you wouldn't particularly love Man United. Like Liverpool playing such a swashbuckling style versus Man United's dour performances. What's your take on Man United?
I mean, it obviously is chalk and cheese between, you know, Liverpool and Manchester United, for example. But ultimately, Yoko last season, Manchester United finished the season with two trophies and Liverpool finished with zero. And, you know, it's a case of what would fans rather have? I mean, I think, you know, the style of football Liverpool play is probably more sustainable. It's probably easier to develop in terms of, you know, they're very good going forward and they can fix the back line. And, you know, obviously they've spent a lot of money there on Virgil van Dijk trying to do so. Whereas with Manchester United, you look at some of the players at their disposal and you do wonder, how is he not getting them in a more free-flowing, swashbuckling style of play? You know, obviously they're quite strong defensively, but a team that has Martial, Lingard, Rashford, Lukaku, Matthew, Mkhitaryan, and obviously Paul Pogba, you feel like he should be producing far more output. But ultimately, you know, Mourinho, short-term at least, he gets results, he gets trophies, and that's what he delivered to Manchester United. If you would have asked a Liverpool fan if they would have swapped with Manchester United last season, I think a fair few would have said yes, you know, in terms of they went to Wembley and won the League Cup, they went to Stockholm and won the Europa League, and ultimately, no one ever remembers, you know, how you win the trophies. It's just the fact that you did win those trophies. So I think long term, you know, I think Liverpool are in a better position to under Klopp than what Man United are under Mourinho. But at the same time, you know, he's getting the results. The problem for United and Mourinho is when they don't, and they haven't in recent, before the Everton game, they haven't been getting those results. That's when obviously the discontent can creep in.
And just to put your English hat on for a moment, Jesse Lingard, where does he rate in the English kind of, I don't know, I mean, he obviously plays across the forward line, but maybe, you know, like some like Dele Alli would play a similar position at times. Where do you think Lingard rates compared with Alli?
I think Alli's a class above, to be honest. I think he's going through a little bit of a problematic spell at the moment. I think his temperament isn't the best sometimes, and he's definitely got a red card at the World Cup, you know, quarter final or last 16 written all over him. But, you know, I think that's something that England need, not necessarily in terms of, You know, getting sent off, and he's got that spark, that little bit of creativity, that little bit of, you know, Gascoigne like genius almost, where he can turn something into something. And Lingard, I feel like the thing with England. I mean, I must confess, I'm not the biggest follower of England, the national team. I think, you know, in Liverpool in general, there's a bit of a no one's really bothered about England. I think everyone's just happy enough with. I don't know really. I think that there's a bit of a disconnect in general between. I think, you know, going back 10, 15 years, I just feel like England was always considered sort of a southern venture, if you will, you know, a London-based venture. Something that was for the London teams, and it was very London-centric. And I don't think, you know, Liverpool or Everton fans have ever really gotten into the spirit of England. I think that might have changed a little bit in recent times, but I just think there's a disconnect between the mentality of your average Liverpool fan and your average England fan, maybe. I mean, that's just me speaking from a personal perspective, looking at, you know, what Liverpool and Everton fans say to me. But, you know, obviously I still follow them and still keep an eye on them. And you look at it like an England squad there, and the way Lingard's been playing, you'd be very surprised if he didn't get a call from Gareth Southgate. Yeah. I just think it feels with Southgate squads, they're so experimental at the moment, and they're so... You know, there'll always be a name that'll surprise you. So maybe that'll be Lingard. I feel like if he's playing that three at the back and the three attackers, you feel that Ali and Kane are absolutely nailed on to play in two of those three positions. And, you know, maybe Lingard could provide, you know, a little bit of a wild card element in that third attacking position. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see. He's been in great form. And, you know, from the outside, obviously, looking in terms of Manchester United and Lingard, it looks like it's not necessarily a purple patch. He's just taken the next step maybe now, and he's looking to be a bit more consistent in his performances.
Shane, where's the value at Ladbrokes on this one? It's a Friday 8 p.m. Yeah. Kickoff.
It's hard to know, Shane. I mean, Man United are very short in the betting. 1-4, the draw 21-5, Derby at 11-1. I'm looking at the halftime, full-time markets here. Considering that, I mean, it all depends on what side Mourinho fields, of course, against Derby. On Friday night, but 10-11 United half time, full time. So to be leading at half time and to be leading at full time, I mean, it stretches that 1-4 out drastically in terms of value if United are ahead at half time. So that might be the way to go.
Yeah, I think like Derby are going to come here full of confidence. They're undefeated in their last seven, and if United do rest a few players, and especially after Bristol City getting a result against them in the League Cup, you know, they'll be full of confidence here. And I think it's a huge price for the draw. Absolutely huge price. I can see Derby maybe sneaking something, maybe getting a replay.
Home game against Derby, Championship side, Pat?
I don't see it. Derby are second in the Championship. Wolves are running away with it. So there's really only one spot up for grabs at the moment. Derby are 2 points clear of the third place team. There's a bunch of teams there. There are five or six teams maybe that there's maybe only 6 or 7 points separating them. So I'd be amazed if Derby threw the kitchen sink at Man United. They'll want to get promoted. And that's the way it goes in the FA Cup the last 20 years with the money that's in the game and in getting to the Premier League and in staying in it. The FA Cup is a distant second.
Yeah, there's a couple of teams, or a couple of players from the Derby team like Vidra, Nugent and Huddlestone that we might know. But I mean, realistically, Christian, it's very hard to make a case for Derby winning this game, is it?
I mean, I can't. I must admit, again, I've seen a little bit of the Championship. It looks like Wolves have absolutely run away with it. But, yeah. I mean, Gary Rowett's a decent manager. Obviously, you look at what happened to Birmingham since he left them, and they just seem to have gone further and further into the mire, whereas he's sort of flourished. And I saw them against the Forest. They were quite impressive. They won 2-0 back in, I think that was October. Obviously, see a little bit of them. But I just feel like if, you know, take away the whole romance of the Cup, if this was a Premier League game and Manchester United were playing a side who were in the bottom six, let's say, of the Premier League, I don't think you'd be given Derby much hope. You know, there's always the opportunity of, you know, Mourinho resting players and United not being on the game. But I think it'll probably be a routine, comfortable United win.
Yeah, I'd be going with 4-1 myself. Pat, what would you go with?
I'd say something like 3-0 again, yeah.
Yeah, take your pick, Rob.
I'd say United will win, but I just think the value is with the draw. I think there's no value in backing United.
Yeah, yeah. Surely they'll bulldozer them eventually here.
Yeah, that bet that I mentioned at the start there, 10-11. I mean, if United are ahead at halftime, say, even just 1-0, you can see them comfortably winning 2 or 3-0 come the end of 90 minutes. So 10-11 about United halftime, full-time looks the value to me.
And then just looking ahead to Saturday, one of the games that stood out, well, a couple of the games that stood out to me, Norwich City against Chelsea and Notts Forest against Arsenal. I just want to look back on the Chelsea-Arsenal game during the week, 2-2 at the Emirates. Absolutely sensational game, again, as they tend to always be involving Arsenal. But Alvaro Morata, have you, like, I mean, he'd barely hit a...
He wouldn't hit a cat's arse with a banjo. You have to be scoring. Like, to be getting into those positions and not
just
scoring.
Just time after time. He was brutal, Pat.
Well, it was like a young Julio Salinas. I remember former Barcelona centre forward. He was very extremely poor. He had just no conviction with any of those chances.
His chance in the first half was a glaring miss. I mean, he was through on goal. I mean, those are the kind of chances where people will say, oh, you know, he had too much time to think about it, but he didn't even hit the target.
Christian, have you seen this guy live in action this year?
Yeah, I have done actually. Yeah, he reminds me a little bit of Torres back when he was at Liverpool. The way his movements and his touch, and he likes to show the defender one way and then the other, and he can leave them for dead. I just think he's finding his feet. This is the first time really. I mean, he had a little spell of events, but it's the first time where he's been sort of the main man at a top club, and you just wonder how that's impacted upon him mentally. He's always sort of been on the periphery of Real Madrid. He was at Juventus, but it was a weird setup there. I think he's obviously coming and replaced Costa. He's a completely different player for Costa. You know, sort of a Beauty and the Beast sort of element to it. But I saw an interesting stat earlier that, you know, I think he's only his conversion rate with his feet is only 8%, although with his head it's somewhere in the 20% range. So he's obviously very good in the air, and there's something to develop there when it comes to when the ball's at his feet in front of goal. But you know, what you got to remember, he's young. His transfer fee shouldn't work against him, because it's Chelsea to Real Madrid. It's going to be a massive, massive deal anyway. And it's just he'll essentially have, you know, Spain's hopes resting on his shoulders in terms of striking at the World Cup. So I think he's a good player. I think he can get even better. I think he just had an absolute nightmare last night against Arsenal. It was just one of those where the first one doesn't go in, and it's obviously playing on his mind, and all confidence is drained from him. He needs to start against Norwich perhaps, and bang in a couple against a side struggling in the Championship perhaps.
Just to mention Morata, by the way, you say 13-5 for the first goal, another double odds match in your Ladbrokes shop this weekend. Of course, it depends on who starts really. I mean, you'll see the odds drastically changing when the team sheets come through, but he's 13-5 for the opening goal.
Rob, would you be forgiving of Morata, 25-year-old who's been at massive clubs, Real Madrid, Juventus, Chelsea, when you're finally asked to step up and be the main man?
Look, last night was terrible. Like, it was the chances he had, there's no excuse for missing them, you know, in any game. I know it's a huge match and everything else, but I mean, yeah, as you said, 25 years of age, you have to be scoring those goals.
Yeah, and so against Norwich, you'd imagine Chelsea are gonna get through this one, Pat.
You would imagine so, yeah. I remember the last time they met in the FA Cup, Franco Zola scored that iconic from a corner kick. But yeah, I know Chelsea got shocked in the Cup a couple of years ago. Was it when the year they won the league? I think it was at Huddersfield or someone came to. It was a third tier team. Possibly Brighton came to Stamford Bridge and won, but that was one in a million. Well, I can't remember which team it was, so it isn't that good. But no, there probably will be some bizarre results somewhere next weekend, but I don't see it being in that particular game.
And I don't see Burnley going to Man City and shocking them either, but that's for another day. I presume we'll all go for an away Chelsea win here. Wes Hoolahan won't do it all on his own.
No.
I presume you agree there, Christian, on that one?
Yeah, definitely. I think Chelsea are very much a side who love the FA Cup, aren't they? Obviously, beating finals last season. I think Norwich struggled a little bit as well under Farke this season, so I think it'll be a nice Chelsea win for them.
That's Saturday at 5:30. Sunday, 4:00, Notts Forest against Arsenal. The Gunners have plenty of injuries, the likes of Ramsey, Giroud, there's a few more, like their fullbacks, the likes of Monreal as well. But Forest are managerless. Mark Warburton got sacked, they're in 14th position. Arsenal, you can't really trust them as far as you throw them, but still, Shane.
Yeah, no, it's definitely reflected in the match betting itself, Shane. 9-2 against a bit Forest, 3-1 the draw. Arsenal only 8-15, so again, these odds can drastically change by the time the team sheets come out this weekend.
Hard to go against the win for Arsenal here.
I can see one of the big teams maybe drawing at the weekend, maybe not losing, but I mean, you can't be backing against Arsenal. That's a hell of a price, 8-15.
Yeah, Arsenal have won 3 out of the last 4 FA Cups. They've got a huge pedigree in the competition. it's been very good to Arsene Wenger, so I don't think he'll be turning his nose.
It seems to be his saviour come the end of every season, doesn't it? So,
Christian, have you seen Arsenal in the flesh this year?
I was at the free game just before Christmas.
Glorious stuff, wasn't it?
A 10 p.m. deadline, so that was a very stressful night indeed. It was. They remind me of Liverpool a couple of years ago in terms of there's just no rhyme or reason to what you're going to get from Arsenal or what you expect. They're just a madcap team, bit of a head case, and you know, they could easily go to Forest and hammer them 5-0, but they could easily wilt under the light of the City ground and lose 1-0. It's a hard one. I'd never be betting on Arsenal, to be honest, at the moment, because all bet you would be backing, I think, goals.
Pat, you like the Watford against Bristol City match, don't you?
Yeah, you know, Watford are in a little bit of free fall at the moment. Bristol have just beaten Man United in the League Cup. They're 11-2 to come to Watford and win. Watford just dropped a 10, so there is a bit of potential there. There's another couple of matches I've picked out. Like, you look at Stoke struggling badly at the moment. They're going to Coventry, who are third in League Two. Coventry are 18-5 playing at home. Like, it's a double-edged sword for Stoke, because probably the last thing Mark Hughes wants is the extra games that a cup run would bring, but at the same time, could he survive going to a third-tier team and getting knocked out? Probably not. Another potential is Exeter at home to West Brom, who've yet to pick up a win under...
They're 20 games without a win.
Alan Pardew. It's 10-3 for Exeter at home, and probably the best potential possibly is Fulham at home to Southampton. Also on a bad run. Probably don't want the hassle of a cup run. Fulham are 2-1 playing at Craven Cottage. So,
Christian, just looking back at West Brom, who are going to play against Exeter City, and Alan Pardew, is he considered a clown? You know, when you're on the beat over there, do you think this guy, oh my God, we have to listen to this lad again?
I mean, I personally like him. I think every time I've sourced him, I think every time I've done
this. This will be good now. You've got to explain this one.
I think that dance on the touchline at Wembley will forever haunt him, won't it? And bear in mind as well, this is the Alan Pardew who obviously scored the famous goal for Crystal Palace against Liverpool in 1990. But I covered the 0-0 with Liverpool and West Brom, and they actually set up really well. And he spoke really humbly afterwards. He surprised me, because he has got that reputation of being, you know, a little bit cocky, a little bit sure of himself, and he was actually, you know, downplayed his role in that result and rather focused it on the players. I think the only worry with Pardew in general is it feels like teams hire him to have that immediate bounce. Teams are in trouble, hire Alan Pardew, and then there's your bounce. Now, if you don't get that bounce, like West Brom haven't received, then what's next for them? I just don't know where West Brom are going to go after this. It's hard to, because when things start going wrong for Alan Pardew, it's very hard for him to turn that ship around. But unfortunately for West Brom, it looks like he hasn't been able to rectify it at the Hawthorns, and the ship's going down, and it's just whether he can break that habit of a lifetime and manage to pull it back ashore. But it's going to be really tough for them. But, you know, on a personal level, I think Pardew gets a bit of a bad rep. He can be seen as a bit of a clown, and obviously that dance in the cup final. But I think you need characters like that in the game.
Who won't you defend? You're defending Morata, now you're defending Pardew.
Mr. eclectic taste.
Christian, devil's advocate over here. Just the last match we'll look at, Rob, you wanted to look at Man City against Burnley.
Yeah, I think, you know, Pep's been complaining about the number of games that have been over to Christmas, so I think you can expect him to rest a hell of a lot of players here. And, you know, City, they did draw with it. They were taking the penalties by Wolves and Leicester in the League Cup, and I can see Burnley maybe sneaking a draw here if all these changes do come.
Yeah, 11-2 about that draw, Rob. City long odds on. They are at home, as you mentioned, 6-1 on. Burnley 16-1 against in that match.
Pat, who do you fancy here? How much, Man City, Burnley?
If there's a, I'd certainly fancy City by at least two goals anyway.
And Christian?
I think City will win, but I think Burnley are such a hard team to play against. The way they shut off the passing angles, it'll be quite intriguing actually, because obviously that's what Guardiola's style of football is founded on, all that lateral movements and you know, passing between the lines, and Dyche has really got them shutting down those lines really well. Liverpool were bang average on New Year's Day, but that was in part because of the way Burnley set up. So think City will win, but I think they'll be given a bit of a run for the money, to be honest.
And just a final question before we let you go, Christian. Are City the most entertaining team to watch that you've ever witnessed in the Premier League?
Yeah, they've got to be up there. I must admit that the 2013-14 season for Liverpool was certainly, you know, from a professional perspective, because obviously it was close to that then, and that was magnificent. Growing up, I always remember the Newcastle's great entertainers, and obviously Man United's treble winners side were fantastic. But Arsenal's Invincibles as well, of course, but this City side are something else, and it's the dominance and the arrogance in which they see off teams. They obviously beat Liverpool 5-0. They saw off Tottenham 4-1. They're beating very good teams, you know, very handsomely, and I just don't know how anyone can stop them in the league or indeed in Europe.
It's interesting there that you kind of mentioned teams where Alex Ferguson, Arsene Wenger at his best, Pep Guardiola, Kevin Keegan with that great entertaining team, and Brendan Rodgers has somehow made it into the list as well. That's quite incredible. There's no man you won't defend.
Well, you know, Brendan's close to my heart as well, to be honest. So, Invincible with Celtic as well. They're playing some good football, so, you know, don't write him off as well. But, yeah, it's... I think Guardiola is up there with the very best at the moment. He's obviously got to do it over a sustained period of time, perhaps. I don't think anyone will ever touch Ferguson. I think Wenger's then that little rung below, but, you know, Guardiola's certainly making waves and getting to that level and doing so quickly as well.
Great stuff. Thanks very much, Christian. We'll chat to you again soon.
Thank you very much. Cheers for your time.
So, lads, moving to the horse race in the Welsh National this Saturday. Rob, do you reckon? It was supposed to be on the 27th of December, but called off and rearranged for Chepstow.
Yeah, look, conditions are going to be absolutely brutal here on Saturday, and it's going to be one for the mud lovers. You're going to have to be back in out-and-out stairs who love heavy ground. And I think the one I'm going to side with here is Raz de Marie, who was second in the race last year to the very classy Native River, and it stayed on really well at the finish. I think it's around about 16-1. The only sort of thing you'd have against him is he's 13, which is quite old to run in this. In these races, you have to be backing two or three horses. You know what I mean? You're not going to, especially these big prices. And the other two, Venetia Williams, a lot of her horses like this, heavy ground. Hoopland as a bow that was third in this race last year is a big enough price. And Emperor's Choice, who won it in 2014, was pulled up last year, so you would be a bit hesitant with that one. But again, they're all double odds, and I think, you know, three of them have good chances.
And Rock the Casbah is a doubt, Shane.
Yeah, very much so. Apparently Philip Hobbs, the trainer, coming out earlier on this morning and saying that if it turns out to be atrocious ground, that he's just not going to take his chances. He's only run once in 20 starts on heavy ground, although he has won on soft. At this Chepstow bottomless ground is just going to be a completely different meal altogether. The one I actually quite like is Vintage Clouds, who's now 10-1 in the Trevor Hemmings colours, loves a Grand National winner, loves a Scottish National winner, indeed any National winner. Of course, he had the famous Ballard Briggs, Manny Clouds, and Hedge Hunter as well, trained by William Mullins. Good runs in his last two starts as well, and was only beaten 6 or 7 lengths the last by Clan de Zoba, who since then ran really well in the Caspian Caviar Gold Cup. Admittedly, now Starkey of course, the Ilfeidist Architect broke down in the run-in, but it was still a good run nevertheless, considering he was outpaced a long way from home. The ground will suit this. I mean, as Rob mentioned, you'll need something that will stay the trip and that will love this heavy ground. I think there's rumours about fences being taken out as well in the contest, which, you know, for any National isn't ideal, because that's the name of the game, really. But if that is to be the case, it's going to be a shame. But hopefully just the race goes ahead now, because, I mean, if it doesn't go ahead this weekend, it's going to be interesting to see what they do with the Welsh National. And they might consider even running it at a different venue, I'd say.
Where will you be putting your money, Shane?
Oh, it's going to be Vintage Clouds for me, 10-1. Big doubts over Rock the Casbah has been tipped up by many of the tipsters over recent weeks. Mystery, currently the 7-1 clear favourite. It's then 8-1 each of two, but Wild West Wind and Beware the Bear, who won with a slip saddle the last day at Newcastle, I think it was. And 9-1 Barba Vintage Clouds for me.
I'm going to size with Raz de Marie for Irish trainer Gavin Cromwell, who second last year, and I think he could go one better this time around.
Okay, so we'll just move on to darts then quickly. Rob Cross won the PDC Championship at the weekend, beating Phil the Power Taylor, if you can call him that, 7-2. It was a real whitewash. Pat, the BDO darts starts this Saturday. I presume you have a massive problem with darts. Your Twitter would suggest as much.
No, I have a massive problem with Phil Taylor. I actually love the darts.
Do you?
Absolutely.
Hashtag love the darts.
Absolutely, yeah. I love the darts. I think it's a brilliant television sport.
Sport?
Yeah, just
game?
About. Yeah.
Surely it's a game. It's not a sport. I mean, it requires as much physical fortitude as tweeting.
Well, I think it's a bit more dexterity to than that. But I do balk at the suggestion that a 9-dart finish is when it's equated to a 147 in snooker. I just think that's ridiculous. Because
147 is much harder.
Like, absolutely, yeah. Yeah. So, oh, yeah. Like, it's a great feat to pull off a 9-darter, but it's just not comparable to the craft required to put together a 147 break. But the BDO championship is very much the poor relation. It's like a developmental intermediate type.
Yeah, it's on the hind tail, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so. You look at the amount of winners from that competition that are now in the PDC.
They all seem to make the transition, whether it's sooner or later. I mean, we've seen it with Stephen Bunting. Raymond van Barneveld was the same. He was a four-time winner of the BDO before he won his PDC.
It's like the glory days of wrestling when the WCW guys move over to the WWF. But Pat, Philip Power Taylor is going to have the match play, or has had the match play named after him. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's outrageous.
Why?
Because he's a 16-time winner of it, though.
Convicted sexual offender. That's I'd be putting that top of any list.
I'd have to agree with Pat here, lads.
But in terms of the sport,
you're
going
to defend
itself,
him now.
But in terms of the sport itself, I mean, darts wouldn't be where it is right now. He helped form the company.
I agree.
Back
we should nearly get Christian back on to defend him. He's going to defend anybody.
Oh well, I agree. He's the greatest of all time. He was a phenomenal player, and he brought a level of funding into the sport, a bit like Tiger Woods in golf, which wouldn't be there. And everyone has benefited from what he brought to darts, but I think he's a grotesque character, and beyond his darting ability, I think he has little, if any, redeeming features.
He's graceless, isn't he, Rob?
Oh yeah, I think he deserves it. I really
you think he deserves
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I think so.
So
think
you're willing to overlook?
He's won it 16
yeah,
times.
Yeah, he's done so much. He's done far more in the sport than anyone else ever will. Yeah.
Well, how many Oscars has Harvey Weinstein won, and are we going to start naming Oscars after?
But in terms of the actual sport,
Pat, we're on the same side here.
You're judging it on in terms of sporting achievements there, and as I mentioned, darts wouldn't be where it is today if it wasn't for Phil Taylor, and you know the amount of tournaments over, I think 100 tournaments.
You're a disgrace, Shane.
I'm defending him as a sports
person.
Surely
his acts override whatever happened in the sport.
And I was actually a tear in my eye now when I seen the call play come on there at the end on New Year's Day.
You love Lance Armstrong too, don't you?
As did Pat.
Tears of joy.
Can we talk about Ben Johnson as well? So I actually, just out of curiosity, I said it started, I mean, I don't watch BDO darts. Nobody really watches BDO darts. It's terrible. But I was looking it up and seeing what are the runners and riders like. So the three favourites are Glenn Durrant, Danny Noppert and Jamie Hughes. And the first leg, Glenn Durrant, 47-year-old, not in great shape. Don't want to go down the route of body shaming here, but not in great shape. And then I expected the other two lads to be absolute blimps as well, because, you know, we all have this idea in our heads that they've got the deadly tattoos on their forearms and they're absolutely massive fat necks on them. But he's in good shape, 27-year-old. The next lad, Jamie Hughes, 31. So maybe they're not all the exactly what we'd imagine, which is just these beery lager louts in a pub, a smoky pub.
Yeah, I actually remember when Michael Van Gerwen first came on the darting scene, he actually went to the BDO. And
he was
as thin as a whippet. He had a full head of blonde hair. I think he lost his first round match to Gary Robson, and he switched to the PDC soon afterwards. And it took him a few years to take off. But yeah, the Dutch fella who was runner up last year, Danny Noppert, he's only 27. You would imagine that he obviously looks to go one better this year, and I would imagine he's looking to maybe pick up the BDO title and follow the likes of Van Gerwen and Van Barneveld into the PDC. This is probably just a stepping stone for him, realistically.
He's currently 7-1, clear second favourite, very sharp price favourite in Glenn Durrant, the winner of it last year, 11-8. 7-1, then Noppert. 10-1, Jamie Hughes. Scott Mitchell, 12-1. 16-1, Barry. No, Pat is very sweet on one here at a big price. Scott Waits, and I'm in full agreement with him as well, at 22-1. And just in terms of comparing the PDC and the BDO, just to put it on a level here, of course, the two of them combined to face off against one another in the Grand Slam of Darts, which happens every year. It's a new enough initiative that's come into darts over the last number of years. And I think it was Glenn Durrant who won the BDO World Championship last year, was the furthest one. I think he got as far as the quarterfinals before he was knocked out by Peter Wright, and the rest were all pretty much knocked out in the group stages. It just goes to show the difference in class between the PDC and the BDO. But in terms of a bet here, I think Scott Waite's at 22-1. He's won it before, hasn't he?
He's won it twice before. He's one of only two multiple champions in the field, and I went Martin Adams, and Martin Adams is about 63. Yeah, he's probably over the top at this stage. And just when you mention the Grand Slam of Darts, Scott Waite's is the only player from the BDO to cross over and win the Grand Slam of Darts. So he does have pedigree. I don't think he's a full-time professional in that he works as a carpenter. So
he's unseated here as well, I think.
Yeah, so I'm not sure if it's a case of maybe he prioritises his work at other parts of the year, but I would imagine he would be looking to hit the ground running for this, and I'd say he's a serious dark horse. And like, and he does have the pedigree. He probably is a player who could switch over to the PDC and be very competitive.
Okay, well, that's the darts. Just finally, lads, we'll go to the rugby. There's a couple of more interprovincial clashes this weekend. Leinster against Ulster at the RDS on Saturday, and then we've got Munster and Connacht. I'll just start with you, Shane. What's the betting like on Leinster versus Ulster?
Yeah, Leinster, Leinster very short here in the match, betting 1-9, the tie 33s, Ulster 11-2, on the handicap 14 is the spread, 10-11 about Leinster.
Mm, six straight victories for Leinster between the Pro 14 and Champions Cup, Pat.
Yeah, and
could have lost to Connacht.
Yeah, you know, Connacht really later on tick for the in the closing stages. But in fairness to Leinster, they're winning games in various fashions. They grounded out twice against Exeter. I was actually at the second game, and then they were brilliant to watch on St Stephen's Day against Munster. I can't see them not winning. And with Ulster, I've flattered to deceive a bit. Like, you know, would they have beaten Munster?
Yeah, from 17-0 down, Sam Arnold gets the red card. There's a yellow card as well.
And I think more than any field sport, I think being a man down in rugby is more punishing than in any other game. So you would expect them to put a serious dent when they were a man up. So I think if Leinster turn it on, they could easily clear that 14-point handicap, and I'd fancy that at 10-11.
How highly do you rate Jordan Larmour? He's after scoring great tries against Ulster and Munster, and Six Nations is only around the corner.
Yeah, I was actually in my local rugby club on Stephen's Day, and
you're a good GA man.
I know, but sure, there's a good atmosphere up there on a Stephen's Day. But the place went wild when he scored that try against Munster. It's as good a solo try as you could hope to see, and he's probably a dark horse to break into the Ireland team for the Six Nations.
I'd give Ulster a chance here. Rory Best, Dean Henderson and Jacob Stockdale are back here. So, Shane, would you give him a chance?
You'd have to. I mean, I wouldn't be the biggest rugby aficionado now that you're ever going to see, but Leinster are in good form. And I mean, if Pat mentions there, he's quite sweet in the handicap at 14. The tie in the handicap, by the way, 25-1, plus 14, but Ulster is 10-11. So you would imagine Leinster should be very difficult to beat, I would say.
And then Connacht are going to... Oh, sorry, Rob.
I think Leinster will be hard to beat, and I'd expect them to win, but I just think Ulster plus 14 at 10-11 is a good bet there.
Like, that is good, actually, yeah.
I think, you know, they could... I can't see Leinster absolutely wiping the floor with them. I think Ulster gives them a good
I'll
game.
Have a nibble at that myself, yeah. I think. Then the final game, Munster against Connacht. Connacht had, 28 phases they had inside Leinster territory late on to try and get a winning score. Very much a feeling of leaving it behind them.
Yeah, and in fairness, my feeling on Ulster maybe struggling to come within 14 points of Leinster is to a large degree based on the fact that Connacht gave them quite a walloping there a couple of weeks ago. Connacht's really picked it up since the couple of Challenge Cup victories over Breve and they're climbing the table. Can I see them going to Munster and winning? Probably not. I think they've only won there once since 1986.
The only thing is, though, Munster have a bit of an injury crisis at the moment, because Niall Scannell's ribs, Tommy O'Donnell with the shoulder, Calvin Nash hips, then you've Billy Holland and Chris Clute with their return to play protocols, and they won't be involved. Sam Arnold is out with a three-week
ban. Very short in the betting here, 1-6.
That seems a bit ludicrous.
So, like, even at 33s, yeah, as you said,
Connacht were hammered by Leinster,
Connacht hammered Ulster.
Yeah, Connacht hammered.
So, and like, Munster are going to be desperate here to avoid a third straight derby defeat. Like, that would be disastrous. And I think the handicap here for Connacht is the way to go. I think Munster will win, but I think it could be a very, very narrow victory. And I think Connacht at
plus 12
or 10-11 is definitely the way to go.
And they've the worst disciplinary record in the Pro 14 as well, Pat.
Which, Connacht?
Munster.
Oh, yeah,
with three red cards, a lot of yellow cards. Do you see it that way, that there's a lack of discipline there? I mean, this could be a third straight interprovincial loss.
I suppose, like I said, if you're getting red cards in rugby, like I said, I just think it's more costly than it would be in hurling, football, soccer, or any other major field sport. There has been a changeover of management mid-season, which is highly unusual for rugby. Like, it usually is very structured in terms of you have your same playing a management group for the season. I wouldn't read too much into what I'd say. It's probably more just a blip in terms of the disciplinary run they're having at the moment. I don't think they're going to be shipping red cards for that.
And lads, just finish up. Any bets of the week?
Yeah, one for me that runs at Chepstow, hoping that Chepstow goes ahead. The grade one, the future champions finale juvenile hurdle over 2 miles. It all depends on if one horse takes his chance here. He's entered in this race and also the Tolworth at Sandown on the same day, which is We Have a Dream. But the one that hopefully, should he take his chance, Mercenaire for Nick Williams and Lizzie Kelly, was a winner by 25 lengths the last day on soft ground at Exeter over 2 miles and a furlong. Trainer 42% in recent weeks as well. You'd imagine should go off, should We Have a Dream take his chance in the lineup, around about maybe 3-1, just working off tissue prices at the moment. Going to put that into a double with Man United half-time, full-time against Derby at 10-11.
I'm going to go for a big odds here. I'm going to go with Raz de Marine, the Welsh National, 16-1. I just think the form of last year's race is really, really solid, and I think, you know, conditions to suit and everything Saturday. It's about 16-1, I think, is a great price.
And Pat?
I like Sadio Mane to score for first goal Liverpool against Everton. No, it's contingent on this flight that he's getting back from Africa on the night before.
He's well rested.
Will he start? He's 11-2 to be first goal scorer, 17-10 to score anytime. Another one I like, just briefly, is in Liverpool are on a 16-match unbeaten run, and over the course of those 16 games, they've won and with more than 2.5 goals per game. At 11-10, that's happened 9 times over the course of that run. If you want to be a little bit greedy and go with 3.5 goals and Liverpool to win, that's happened 5 times in that run, and it could have happened another couple of times. But for, you know, 3-3 draws against the likes of Arsenal and Sevilla, which really should have been won. So I think there'll be goals in Anfield tomorrow night, and I expect Liverpool to win. So there's probably a bit of value there.
Good stuff, lads. I think we've it all said. So don't forget, you can follow us on Spotify and iTunes. From myself, Shane Stapleton, Pat Nolan, Shane Mahan, Rob Hines and Christian Walsh, who we had over the phone from Liverpool Echo. We'll chat to you again soon.
The Back Page, brought to you by Mirror Sport and backed by Ladbrokes.